You're listening to a podcast from the Institute for Research on Poverty at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm Dave Chancellor. For this podcast, I spoke with economist Bradley Hardy of American University about his research on income volatility. Income volatility, in this case, is basically a measure of change in income over time for individuals or households. Most researchers agree that there's been some rise in this volatility since the early 1970s, but there's less agreement about whether volatility is still on the rise or if it's something that we should be worried about. So let's turn to Professor Hardy to learn more about what he sees going on here.
Over the past 30 to 40 years, we've seen, in general, a rising trend in volatility, particularly throughout the 70s and 80s. The literature isn't in necessary agreement. You know, many of the measures are sensitive to the data set used. But that said, in general, the sense is that volatility trends have been sort of positive and upward, particularly throughout the 70s and 80s for men with respect to earnings. And at the same time, we've observed a decline in the earnings volatility of women, which has interestingly coincided with their so-called continuous employment in the labor force. So the entry of women into the labor force more consistently throughout, you know, since the 1970s really has resulted in a decline in their volatility. And so I think this is an interesting point. The trend is driven by labor force exits, so people potentially losing their jobs or leaving the labor force for a variety of reasons.
Hardy says that you can mechanically understand that a person's transition from steady earnings to little or no earnings would lead to higher levels of volatility. But he says there's much more going on with the measure than just employment risk.
I think that in these volatility analyses, it is important to understand that we're certainly picking up some employment risk, but it's a summary measure. So, you know, at the same time, you have, households and individuals who have just chosen occupations or have sort of made decisions that are sort of highly related to sort of an income loss or an income gain or an earnings loss or an earning gain. It looks, you know, highly unstable, but it's not always an employment shock or something like that.
Hardy says that minorities have higher rates of volatility than whites, and, as you might expect, single female-headed households and household heads with less education also show higher volatility. These findings suggest, although Hardy cautions they can't prove, that this instability is occurring among relatively disadvantaged populations. There's good reason to be concerned about this, Hardy says.
One example of a concern one might have is that with this instability, you're really talking about a heightened lack of predictability with income, and this can affect eligibility for public programs. So you can imagine families maybe near poverty, you know, cycling into and out of sort of qualification for public assistance. And so this can have all sorts of impacts.
As it turns out, these public assistance programs show up as being very important in smoothing out slumps in household income. And although you might expect the second earner in a two-income household to pick up the slack when the other worker has an earnings loss, Hardy has found that this isn't the case as much as you might think.
Entering into the current study that we're still embarking upon, the thinking was that we'd see a very clear and obvious sort of smoothing of earnings volatility by the secondary worker, for example. So if the primary earner or the household head was experiencing increased volatility, we were expecting that we'd see very clear and strong responsiveness from the secondary earner. But we certainly don't see that to the degree that we expected. Rather, it's the tax system and the transfer system that at different points of the income distribution do intercede to dampen volatility, as well as other sources of income. So it would appear that households are taking advantage of other non-labor sources of income from the current population survey data, which could include investment income, for example, to dampen volatility. So there's certainly some of this smoothing occurring through the secondary earner, but much of this is actually occurring through the tax and transfer system.
Hardy says that we might think about measures of income volatility as a proxy for other things going on in the economy. So I asked him what kinds of things he might look for to explain shifts in the level of volatility experienced by individuals and families.
First and foremost, you know, I think about economic downturns and recessions. And so you're certainly thinking about the role of a measure of instability in picking up the experiences of individuals and households in the economy to try to understand whether or not American workers are exposed to heightened risk. So that's one. And then also with the role of exits from the labor force and entry into the labor force and driving the volatility trends, just thinking about changes in sort of cohort level changes in labor force entry and exit. So thinking about baby boomers retiring, thinking about, again, job loss or employment exits, those being some of the big drivers of volatility potentially. So, when I think about these trends, typically I'm thinking about sort of, the degree to which individuals and families might be exposed to some labor market risk. And then the degree to which instability has different welfare consequences across the income distribution. So volatility might mean something very different among the very affluent households and individuals as compared to volatility exposure among, say, the bottom 1-10% of incomes in the U.S.
As we look at the long-term economic picture for low-income people in the U.S., Hardy says work on income volatility can offer a useful complement to more traditional measures of income.
My sense is that we can think about these measures and really kind of merge them with our knowledge about both the official and the alternative poverty rates in this country to maybe get a more complete snapshot of overall well-being.
With the U.S. economy in the midst of a sluggish recovery, the ups and downs of household income have big social and economic implications. Measures that help us to better understand this have much to offer poverty researchers in the years to come. Thanks to Bradley Hardy for taking the time to explain some of this work. You've been listening to a podcast from the Institute for Research on Poverty.